Hi everyone, Dave Levinsky from Growth Inc. here. Today I will be interviewing Trevor Shansky. Trevor is the founder and president of eWord of Mouth, and you can visit them at ewordofmouth.com. And Trevor is a very impressive and experienced entrepreneur. He was formerly the chief operating officer of Warehouse One Limited, which is a 100-plus store national retail apparel company. And what was really cool about his experience there was that he took the company from just 13 local stores to 108 national stores and grew revenues from to nearly $100 million in sales. And there's very few people that have the ability to take a company from that early stage and really grow it successfully. So I'm really excited to talk to Trevor about his newer company, eWord of Mouth. And Trevor, thanks again for taking the time to speak with me.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Excellent. So, Trevor, can you start by telling us all about, you know, who eWord of Mouth is and what it is you're doing?
Well, eWord of Mouth, the concept grew out of the realization that companies were not leveraging, firstly identifying their customers who were promoting their company, and then leveraging their social network. Okay, and we know statistically, it's been proven that friends and family in your customer's social network are four times more likely to buy your product or service than if just approached by mass media or best marketing practices. So really, the impetus for eWord of Mouth was to identify the promoters of a business and then show businesses how to reward those promoters and then identify who is in their social network or network neighbors.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go about doing that?
Well, what we do, okay, on a technical level, so our solution, okay, is geared for multi-location companies that operate either through bricks and mortar locations or online. So, and we can do both e-tailers and bricks and mortar and bricks and clicks or hybrid companies. The objective of our technology and service is to grow their traffic and sales exponentially by leveraging their existing customer base. Now, how do we do that? We take a business's existing customer base, their email specifically, we bring them into our online technology, an on-demand technology, then we generate referrals. Then what we do is we use targeted email and mobile marketing to convert those referrals into customers. And then we go one step further and make sure that the company's brand stays top of mind. So we're an on-demand technology combined with a complete managed service. We give our businesses and clients a vehicle to grow their sales, but more importantly, we show them how to use it and stay with them every step of the way from campaign design to deployment.
Got it. Okay, so you mentioned, you know, generating referrals. So let's say that I have three stores somewhere, and I have a list of customers that are on my sort of newsletter list. And talk to me about how do I use that to generate referrals through eWord of Mouth.
Well, typically, what we'll do is we'll design a referral campaign whereby your company will send a request to your customers to refer friends and family to your business, and both parties will be rewarded with certificates, okay, for coming in and doing business with you. So let's say in a context of a restaurant, okay, that you would give your customer $5 off their next purchase, and you'd set a minimum purchase amount if they refer up to five friends and family. And then you'd also tell them that their friends and family would be getting a special offer to come and do business with you. So the email goes out, your customer refers five friends and family, they get their certificates, they come in and do business with you, increases your traffic and sales, and your customer also gets their certificate and comes in, it increases their loyalty, and then they make a repeat purchase. So in aggregate, the traffic and sales go up, you grow your database, and you increase your sales at the same time.
Got it. So referral marketing, just it's such a great way of doing marketing. Obviously, if you can get a customer of yours to refer, you know, friends and family, and as you started this conversation, talking about how friends and family members are four times more likely to buy the product and service because they've been influenced by one of your customers, but they've been influenced by someone they know, which is one of your customers. What are some of the best practices that you can think of in referral marketing, and what are some things that you, an entrepreneur or business owner, may want to avoid?
Well, in e-marketing in general, okay, you'd want to avoid using harvested lists, okay, or contacting anybody that really doesn't want to hear from you. So we always start when we do an import or we do an online integration with existing customers. And it makes sense. Somebody who is not affiliated with your business or doesn't want to hear from you wouldn't be appropriate to request a referral. It's somebody who's done business with you, is very pleased and comfortable to refer trusted friends and family, okay, to your company. So best practice number one is it isn't necessarily quantity, it's quality. Only collect emails and aggressively collect emails from people who are associated, who have interacted with you on a business level. And then second best practice would be don't be afraid to reward people to give you referrals, because these are the best customers. And it's funny because companies have not hesitated to spend millions, even billions, on mass marketing to acquire new customers, but they've been hesitant to just simply reward their existing customers to tell friends and family about them. They think, many companies think that's an unnecessary expense, where they really could spend a lot less and have a lot more loyalty and penetrate a hidden network that has a lot more potential than you could ever reach through print, radio, and even TV.
Excellent. Now, that first point about, you mentioned that the quality, clearly quality over quantity, but do they have to be a customer? So let's say, I'm going back to my store example, let's say I have a newsletter list, or maybe on my company website I give away a free report or something free in return for an email address. Can I ask a referral request for those people or just buyers?
No, we have done the prospects. I would not necessarily say just customers, but I would define it as somebody who has had a prior interaction with your company. Okay. So that may be signing up for a newsletter, it may be purchasing. We've found that the highest referral rate will occur with people who've made a purchase, but referrals also can occur with a prospect list, you know, assuming they're familiar with their business you know, through an opt-in process of giving you permission to communicate with them.
Got it. Now, I've heard, I think it was a story of a woman working with a company that was doing timeshares, and they wanted to try to get their customers to refer people, and the customers were hesitant because they didn't want their friends to lose money, or it was some sort of timeshare or investment opportunity. How do you overcome a customer's willingness to or concern about opening up their sort of network to you and referring people?
It's funny you should mention that, because we have several timeshare customers and we're actively running campaigns and achieving good success. The people that are being targeted right now in timeshares are, again, two groups. First are the members. Okay, so these people have already invested in the timeshare, are very aware of the value they're receiving, okay, and the value proposition. So they are comfortable, and they're showing to be referring friends and family, because they've already had an experience and they've already invested in the timeshare and achieved the value. Okay, the second group that we're targeting is prospects, like you said, but these people have already gone through what's called, in known terms in the industry, a mini-vac or a mini-vacation. So they've come in at a very, very reasonable or discounted price, enjoyed a weekend vacation in exchange for hearing about the timeshare. They didn't necessarily purchase, but then we're approaching them and saying, look, if you enjoyed your vacation and you want to tell your friends and family, you know, about a new vacation that will be offered at them at a very, very deep discount because you're referring them, and anybody who completes the vacation, you will get a reward, let's say a Visa gift card. Now you have people knowing what the vacation is, okay? So the ones that know what it is, they've been through it, they know that they have received value for the money, they know what their friends are going to be getting, they are proving to be comfortable referring their friends, and they also will expect a reward, you know, if their friends come in and do business. So it's all about having that positive experience. Obviously, if they had a negative experience, you wouldn't expect them to make any referrals, and you don't want them to make any referrals in that case.
Okay, so the first thing, the customer prospect needs to have a positive experience. That's a given, or they're not going, no matter what, they're not going to refer. And the second thing I'm hearing is this reward system, a reward concept here. Now, are you saying, is a reward critical, and how do you figure out how big a reward has to be, and does the reward need to go to the referrer and the referee? Because you mentioned that the friends should get a reward as well. Can you talk through how rewards work?
We found you don't have to have a reward in a referral process. You could run what's called a feel-good campaign. We have found that rewards greatly amplify response. And from your customer's perspective, why not reward them? Why not give them something to increase their loyalty? And for the most part, there is no exposure. It only results in a benefit. So I always recommend to my clients that, A, the reward makes financial sense, meaning at the very worst, we'll break even. And we always bring the customer back to the place of business, be it a website or a bricks-and-mortar location. So we're always the reward always makes financial sense in itself, a standalone offer, and it's always tied to a repeat purchase because we always want to continually drive traffic back to the storefront or the virtual storefront online. Okay, so that's number one. I mean, you should reward the promoters of your business because, again, we know through research that people who promote your business, if you look at actually the entire network, their social network, they can be worth up to 2 times the lifetime value just of an average customer. So why not reward them and keep getting them to promote your business to friends and family? You know, on the referral side, giving a reward makes people feel special beyond what you would give away, let's say, in mass media. So what we're saying is, listen, I really love this company. I think you're going to love it too. And they are giving an exclusive offer to friends and family of their customers, you know, to come in, let's say, within the next 7 to 10 days. And you're going to get something you can't get anywhere else because I'm referring you to this business. That really, again, rings true in the referral's mind and makes them feel like they're not being treated like anybody else. They're in a special group. Okay, they're being rewarded, and there's a reason to come in a very, very competitive economy these days.
Got it. I like this a lot. This is great. Okay, let me move on to email marketing, which is another key part of what you're doing. What are some, you know, best practices and things to avoid in email marketing? I mean, obviously, same thing as you mentioned, you started talking about obviously not using harvested lists and only people that opt in. So maybe you can give a couple of pointers on your best practices and what you're doing on email marketing.
On email marketing, it goes without saying when you run a referral campaign, you just want to run it to people that have had some type of business interaction with you. If your list is older, it's always challenging. Instead of just approaching people with a promotion or a campaign, we usually like to warm them up and give them an opportunity to opt out. In some cases, bricks and mortar companies have older lists. People may not remember that they gave their email, so we'll generally send out a welcome letter. We'll explain how their email was acquired. Okay, give them the opportunity to opt out, and if they don't opt out, we will entice them to stay on the list by informing them that they will receive, again, special promotions only available to people on the business's list. Personalization is necessary all the time. We always put the person's first name in the subject, you know, to identify, because typically, you know, spammers will not have that. I mean, there's always an opportunity to opt out through every piece of communication on both the customer and the referral side, and complete transparency, you know, identifying the IP address using the sender policy framework to identify the domain keys, you know, for Yahoo, doing everything possible to separate yourself and say, listen, you gave us permission, we think, you know, we want to take advantage of that, and we want to put you in an exclusive club. and we think you're going to be interested in what we have to say, and that this is a valid communication and something we hope that you'll share with friends and family.
Excellent. Now, how do you figure out the best frequency with which to email prospects and customers?
Yeah, we've found that once a week is permissible. How we generally measure that is we will monitor opt-out rates. So especially, again, if the list is older, if it hasn't been marketed to frequently, okay, we don't want to deluge people with communications. So we find weekly. Sometimes we'll mix it up. We'll stagger it to keep diversity. And then if there's something that's very time-sensitive, we will send out a supplementary email, and we also have completely integrated mobile marketing. So we'll also send out a short 160-character text message that will augment an email message. So again, trying to get people, we're mixing it up, giving them variety, you know, so it doesn't get stale, the frequency or the content, and getting them through a number of different mediums, meaning email and mobile messaging.
Excellent. That's something I thought was really cool with the e-word of mouth system that you've developed, is the text messaging aspect of it. Can you talk about that in terms of some of the best practices in text messaging, and what can you expect to achieve from that? And is there any demographic limitations, such as the younger demographic being more prone and more susceptible to acting on those messages?
The text messaging is very forward right now, and what we've done, okay, to make the transition easier is we've integrated it seamlessly into e-word of mouth. So anywhere where you can capture an email address, be it at point of purchase, okay, on a website, through an import, we will provide to allow the client to capture cell phone, opt-in cell phone numbers, okay? So. And what cell phone numbers are good for? In terms of demographics, we know, and I believe that threshold was passed over a year ago, that the younger generation, you know, the teens and the early 20s, use their cell phones now more frequently than email. So very, very powerful in a younger demographic. Some of our restaurant clients are deploying text messaging that do cater to a younger demographic that have, you know, stores and restaurants around universities. Very powerful there. And good for time-sensitive communications. Again, because of the pricing structure, you do not want to deluge people, especially if they have to pay for incoming text message, even though they've opted in. If you've got a weekend special, or even if you want to point them to their inbox right away with a more sophisticated graphical piece, again, it can amplify your response in a very fixed time period.
Got it. Now, how with email marketing and your text messaging, how often should the entrepreneur or business owner be looking at their statistics? You mentioned opt-out rates earlier, and how should they be looking at their, how often should they be looking at open rates, opt-out rates, and those metrics?
Well, we look at that and provide insights and recommendations to our clients on every campaign. So. I don't think that. I mean, obviously, through a campaign, let's say if it has a 7 or 14 day expiry date, we won't take the first hour or first day, okay, as an indicator of what's happening. You'll give it a few days, but we found that peak days during the week are better to administer campaigns, and then we do track it every day to a point where there's diminishing returns in response, and then immediately. Provide recommendations on how we can either leverage that campaign or change components of it to get a better response. And we will guide our clients through that, because interpreting the data is at least half the battle in good e-marketing.
Got it. You mentioned in when we talked about your system, which once again, everyone, it's very, very cool, and you go to ewordofmouth.com and learn more about e-word of mouth and Trevor's company and system. You talked about the coupon redemption feature and tracking that. Can you talk about that? Because that was really, really cool.
Yeah, e-word of mouth has fully integrated barcoded coupon tracking and redemption. So what happens in a bricks and mortar model is people will receive barcoded coupons that they can print, or they can send the barcode information to their cell phone. They can take this information into the retailer or the restaurant, and then the merchant can run those codes through their own point of sale system. But if they don't have a point of sale system, they can simply punch them in to an internet interface into their private back office, and then eWord of Mouth will validate the certificate. It will ensure it can't be used again, and it will make sure it's being redeemed within the expiry date. Now, once that happens, that redemption immediately flows through to our online statistical reporting, so we can see, okay, we can see how many people got the email, how many opened, how many clicked through to their certificate, and then how many actually came in redeemed, and who was a customer versus a referral. So we collect the data and report on it real time at the lowest level of granularity, so we can diagnose immediately where there are opportunities for improvement and what the response was real time.
Got it. And I guess does this track back to what we talked about earlier with the value of the rewards, because the coupon essentially is the reward?
Correct. If the coupon is the reward, some of our clients use their own coupons internally, okay, and we can actually they can use their own coupons, we can distribute them in a graphical format, or we have a hybrid coupon whereby we can use their own internal graphics but then tag it with our barcode for tracking. In an online paradigm for our e-tailers, what we'll typically do is use promo codes in lieu of physical certificates. So instead of getting a physical certificate, people will get a link that has a special promotion code with an expiry that will take them to a shopping cart, for example, where only they can get a special if they refer friends and family. And then on the other side, their friends and family will also get a special coded link that's subject to an expiry date that they can use and go shop online. So it becomes a paperless referral and reward system from the ground up.
Excellent. Trevor, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about operations. And once again, per your background, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the call, the fact that you were the chief operating officer of a company and you helped take it from 13 to over 100 stores, I think it's just quite an achievement and something that I've never done, and I don't think I'd like doing it because it sounds like a whole bunch of work. Maybe you can talk about some of the best practices you had there, and it really, what are some of the challenges in going and really growing a company that quickly, particularly when a lot of the people working for you are virtual? What type of systems did you set up, and what are some of the things that you learned in doing that you can shed light on for other entrepreneurs?
Well, number one is yes, you do need good systems. I think the biggest risk in growth today, first off, there's a lot of technologies out there. There's a lot of products. There's a lot of services. So inevitably, people are going to purchase from people, okay? And what counts is service. And the biggest risk as you grow is compromising that service. As an owner-operator, you can give attention to somebody face-to-face, and nobody's going to care as much about his business as you are. But as you grow, okay, you have to consistently propagate that culture all the way down to the lowest levels. And generally, the lowest levels inevitably are the people that are going to be interfacing with your customers, customers that have potential to give you positive word of mouth or negative word of mouth. So number one is obviously top down, is making customer service a mandate, okay? And number two is putting systems in place to measure that service, okay? So, and these days versus even when I was growing a chain and it was more PC-oriented and virtual private networks were just coming on, you can deploy centralized applications very easily now, and any location that has a connection to the internet and a browser can access very, very sophisticated applications, and you can deploy them immediately. So it is much easier to grow now. There's less overhead, and there's lower cost of ownership because you don't have to go around and install software and worrying about updating it. And, I mean, you can put now training videos online. We can use online meeting facilities and video conferencing, which is all very economical. So, but same concern, okay, you must ensure that service is is paramount, because that's the only thing long term that'll differentiate you. You can't compete on price, you know, with companies that are large, Fortune 100 companies. The only way you can compete is product differentiation and service differentiation, and you need to put in systems that can measure that and support your frontline stuff.
Excellent. And what about what are some of the key challenges? Are there any key challenges that you face as you're sort of ramping up the company?
Well, capital is always a concern. Capital and maintaining that. I'll go back to the service levels. Okay, we talked about maintaining service levels. This is paramount to the business. So, again, people buy from people. They don't buy from things, or they don't buy from portals or technologies. So making your clients feel okay, like you are giving them their sole attention, is our primary focus, and that will continue to be the culture of our company even as we grow. And if we have to restrict growth to ensure those service levels and make our clients feel special, okay, and that they are attended to, then we will do so. The second is to, of course, in these days, especially these days, where capital markets are frustrated and it's challenging, is to make sure you don't put the cart before the horse, okay, in terms of capital investments. You can use technology to scale. So whereas, in an earlier economy, even 5 or 6 years ago, you may need a large office, you may need lots of staff centralized. Now you can use technology. You can use online meetings, video conferencing, software as a service, Web 2.0 technology to decentralize your organization, virtualize it, and you can have best of breed that way too. It's actually a good thing. It's not easy to bring in people to one central location. It's better to go out, get best of breed, let them live where they want, work there where they want, be comfortable, and then monitor their progress using sophisticated online measurement systems. Beyond that, it's fair. It greatly reduces office politics when everybody's working independently, and the common denominator is performance. Either people perform or they don't, and if they don't, they're simply not part of the virtual organization anymore.
Got it. That sounds great. It's very, very helpful. I have one more question. I preach a lot about getting mentors and building a board of advisors, and I was really excited when I was on your website that you list your board of advisors, and it's a pretty impressive group here. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why you originally thought to put together a board of advisors and how you went about doing it and how do you manage your board?
Well, my board was hand-picked intentionally to come from a cross-section of different industries, which E-Word Amals represents. I have people who have come from a finance background, others from a technology background, and others from a sales and marketing background. A lot of them have been mentors and close associates for many years, and cumulatively their experience literally span centuries if you accumulate all of their business experience, and most of them have depth in one specific area. So I wanted to compile a board. I guess my criteria was get a very broad scope, with a lot of depth in specific areas, okay, specifically augmenting my own, because when you're running a company, you have to be a generalist. You want to turn to your board then, you know, who have more depth in certain areas and can illuminate you. Also people that I trusted, that I was associated with, and were comfortable coming in and providing, you know, frank advice when they were needed. I generally don't run, because they're very, very busy people, they're senior executives, many of them are entrepreneurs, CEOs of vice presidents of major companies. I don't lock them into structured meetings. Rather, when I recruited them for my board, I asked them, listen, I'd like to know that you're going to be there, you know, when I really need you, so I can pick up the phone and call them and talk to them anytime, rather than lock them into structured meetings. Again, more of a fluid organization, one that reacts to the business climate, you know, form over function, right?
Got it. Well, excellent. This was really, really helpful, and I think that I think that all the entrepreneurs that listen to this interview or read the transcript are going to get a whole bunch out of it. I think this is very helpful. Trevor, any final, and once again, Trevor Shansky is the president of eWord of Mouth, eWordofMouth.com, you can go to. Trevor, any final words about marketing or growing your company that that maybe I should have asked you that could provide some value to the entrepreneurs that are listening?
Well, first off, I wouldn't get caught up in the media about a recession or that this is a bad time to start a business. I think it's never been a better time to start a business, and a lot of successful businesses have emerged. It's a time of change, but the technology, again, comparing back to growing, you know, a 100-store retail chain back in, you know, back in the late 1990s, the technology now enables you, a small entrepreneur, to be everywhere, to craft a brand image on the internet that rivals a big company, and to find pockets or niches that aren't being exploited by big companies. And a lot of big companies are in trouble. This is the time for the small entrepreneur, and you have to think, if you have been in traditional business, you have to put that aside and look at the technology and find out how to leverage it rather than taking the technology and trying to put it in a traditional business paradigm. See what the technology can do and then design your organization around the benefits of the technology, and you're going to achieve great advantages in terms of cost efficiency, speed, and product and service differentiation over your competitors who have been locked into a certain paradigm for dozens of years and can't easily get out of it or cost effectively change.
Excellent. Once again, Trevor, that was extremely helpful. I got a lot out of it. I just took a bunch of notes, and I think everyone that listens to it, this interview will get a ton of value. Trevor, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Dave.